Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 426, recorded July 7th, 2024.
So today we're doing the two ongoings, Star Trek issue number 21 and Defiant issue number 16.
Yeah, so we get to wrap up the storyline in Defiant, the bug, the parasite bug storyline.
Right. Yep. Finish that one off. And then on the Star Trek front, we're about halfway through the old Pleroma storyline.
Right.
Pleroma. How do you pronounce it?
Pleroma? Yeah.
It's Pleroma. Like yeah.
Plumera. Plumera. Yeah, that's it. the land of the gods.
Right.
And they'll let almost anybody in, as we'll find out.
Yeah, they're pretty loose with the term god.
Yes, I think so. I think we both agree on that.
I mean, spoiler, they don't even have God in there. I kept looking for Tybok, and I didn't see
flowing, exactly, a flowing beard and asking for a starship.
Right.
But he wasn't there.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't a real god because he needed a starship.
Exactly.
Which is funny because all these people somehow got to Pleroma, and did they have starships? And if so, why would a god need a starship?
Well, because gods don't need starship. They just ascend and they just naturally go to Pleroma?
Yeah, I guess I don't know.
It's beyond us. We're not gods. So.
But anyways, that story is not referenced at all in this book. So forget we brought it up.
Exactly.
But anyways, okay. You want to jump into that one? Because that one did technically come out a little before issue 16 of Defiant.
I would love to do that. That would be my pleasure.
Release order.
There you go. Star Trek Defiant, issue 16, Hell is Only a Word, part 5. June 2024 is the published date. Writer, Christopher Cantwell. Artist, Angel Unzeta. Colorist, Marissa Luis. Letterer, Clayton Cowles. Design and production by Neil Yataki, senior editor Heather Antos, editorial assists by Vanessa Real. 3-3-3 covers. So cover A presents Rowan Worf jazzed up on Ketracel Red and ready for some giant insect bloodletting. They're kind of hunched down and Rose in a hero pose, and they almost have like possessed vampire eyes and stuff going. And, of course, they got a little bit of blood from the damage they've taken trying to fight this thing. But there's blood all over the place, and they look possessed. Cover B features a light purple cloud with four large insectoid appendages coming out. On the ground in front of the cloud is an infinite population of alien insects. And this art is by J.K. Woodward. I assume that's, like, the gateway that they're coming into our universe from, our dimension. But it's kind of hard to tell. Retailer incentive cover presents Namira holding a rifle and looking through a doorway into another dimension with tentacles and lightning and all that kind of stuff. And that art is by Jed Mercer. Communique from General Revo to Sub-Commander Majek. See that the Ran Hara Special Forces are on standby for my further orders. There is one final piece to put in place. And I will force her, if I must, for the salvation of the Empire. Sela, Worf, and Ro are all beaten and bloody, but their attacks have weakened the alien queen. Ro's next attack run sees her swatted to the side like a rag doll. Apparently the queen is not weakened enough. Meanwhile, B'Elanna and you are working at a control panel trying to close the portal from another dimension. Through the portal, they can see at least three more alien giant monsters, as huge as the queen, lining up to cross through the portal into our dimension. B'Elanna and you get closer to being able to shut down the Starbase's reactor, which they think will shut down the portal. But then Possessed Starbase officers attack from behind. Yu keeps them at bay, freeing B'Elanna to continue her work. Worf is knocked over by the Insect Queen's huge arm. More of the small alien insects come through the portal and are climbing on Ro. Sela sees the end could be near when she looks at Spock, who is seated on the floor, gibbering phrases repeatedly like, "The many, the many, the many." She runs to Spock, yelling and trying to get him to wake up enough to use his connection to the Queen to stop her somehow. Eventually, she wakes him up when she accuses Spock of acting all modest when in reality, he thought he was a god. I'm really not sure where that came from, but whatever. Elsewhere in the Defiant, Namira is contemplating her next move. Back at the portal, B'Elanna announces she shut down the reactor, but the portal is still open and two more huge monsters have passed through into our world. Yu tries to explain how the power is continuing to flow by way of a runaway chain reaction caused by the alien parasites that are now in control again. B'Elanna agrees and grabs Yu by the throat, saying Yu is a machine and machines are death. But we are life. We are forever. Worf makes a last-ditch attack on the Queen and is able to leap to its upper torso, where his short blade sword pierces her chest. Worf holds on as he falls to the ground, opening up the chest of the beast, which kills it. Great achievement, but more giant insect aliens are through the portal now. Spock is awake and trying to tell the huge alien infestation to stop their advance and return to their dimension. It fails, so Spock tries to communicate with the possessed Starbase crew, telling them it's Starfleet time to rise up and fight back. They try to do so. They unify and resist, and promptly fall to the ground dead. Their insect parasites are dead also, but since they are now dependent on the parasites, the people apparently are dead too. The smaller insects start exploding all around. The small insects in one of the huge aliens' heads start exploding outward and popping like the huge alien monster's skull, like it's full with them. Yu reports that B'Elanna's link to the parasites has been severed as he falls backward to the ground. Spock's head slumps down as he mumbles, "Quiet, the many are quiet." Worf asks if they are safe, and then answers his own question as even more huge parasite monsters are ready to come through the portal. Suddenly, they see light and hear a familiar humming noise, and before they know it, they are back on the Defiance Bridge. Namira, on the other hand, is at the edge of the portal with a little rolling payload of weapons-grade trilithium. Overcomes, she thanks them for not letting her be alone, as she wields her little gift through the portal to the other dimension, where she sets off the trilithium and ends the threat most decisively, for now. After the threat is neutralized, they find a recording Namira left for them. On it, she voices a little goodbye to each member of her crew. In sickbay, B'Elanna eventually wakes up as herself, not part of the alien insect horde or the U collective. On the bridge, Spock reports Defiance engines are at full power and ready to go. Over a comms channel to Yu, who is in a Starbase shuttle ready to head home to his people, they say their fond farewells. After Yu departs, a Romulan deer dex uncloaks next to the Defiant. It's Sela's father, who opens a channel to Defiant and congratulates her for capturing both Ambassador Spock and Ambassador Worf, and asks her to drop shields so they can be taken into custody. Daddy's smile turns to a frown and says if she does not drop shields, she will be destroyed with her ship, and her memory will be celebrated as a hero of the Romulan Empire. Sela turns to the rest of the crew and says, "The Defiant is her ship now. while Daddy Warbucks smiles wickedly on the view screen. To be continued.
Daddy Warbucks. Are you just making fun Daddy of Warbucks. Being bald?
Well, he just reminds you of Daddy Warbucks. He's very bald, and he just reminds you of Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah.
That's how I called him that. He is the daddy.
He is the daddy.
Sela's daddy, and he just looked like Daddy Warbucks.
But Daddy Warbucks was a nice guy. This guy is kind of a jerk.
Well, you know about that. Where did Daddy get all of his wealth? His name is Warbucks. Well, exactly. So he's an arms dealer. So how nice is he?
Yeah. Why did he change his name to Warbucks? I mean, nobody else does that.
Well, that's where he got all of his money.
I get it. But, was his name Smith before? And he's like, I'm making all this money off the war. I'm going to change
my name. I think I'm going to change my name. And because I'm so rich, I can do it. I think that was a very funny name to pick, unless the author of Annie, Little Orphan Annie, mm-hmm. actually slipped a little nugget in there that Daddy Warbucks made his money from war.
Right.
I don't know why.
It's cute. Anyways, but he has pupils too, so he also doesn't look like Daddy Warbucks. Daddy Warbucks had pupils, no irises, right? No, they didn't have
pupils. Annie didn't.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think anybody did in that universe.
You may be right. But I'm thinking about the famous stage play that had, what was that English actor? Finn? No.
Yul Brynner? Forgot his name.
No, not Yul Brynner.
Yeah,
did he ever write Daddy Warbucks?
I don't know, but he would make a great one.
Albert Finney.
Okay.
As I recall, Albert Finney was like the quintessential. I think Albert Finney played Daddy Warbucks in the movie version of stage play.
Anyways, we are way off topic. Yeah,
we're way off. Daddy Warbucks. So, what do you think? The storyline is wrapped up. Do you like how it was wrapped up?
I did not. I liked the Nimara sacrificing herself. I thought that was a good. I mean, I hated that she did that.
Did it. Still.
That was a satisfying end of her story. That, she was always kind of a selfish character. She always thought of herself as being selfish, but then ultimately she was the most selfless out of all of them. Mm-hmm. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I did think it was odd that in this one, there's no flashback scene. So it was all literally just, this is what's happening to her now.
Mm-hmm. Well, they had so many flashback scenes in other issues, so at least we understood her backstory and found out that how screwed up it was.
Right.
And all the trauma she went through. So.
Right.
Apparently, after all that trauma in the prison and in war, she never could really deal with it. So there, all the drugs she was taking.
Right. Right. But no, I thought that was good. And then I liked, she seemed pretty clear-headed there towards the end and even left that funny message to everybody. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
And then the whole Spock thing, I'm with you. Mm-hmm. I did not get what Sela was talking about when she's like, you thought of yourself as a god. And I'm like, no, we didn't. I mean, but then I'm like, does she not really believe that either? And that's kind of what breaks him out of it, that it's just like so absurd that he's like, wait a minute, that's not true. And then he's able to break the hive mind then, or is she right? And then he kind of woke up because he was seeing it too. So how did you take that?
I think the whole God comment is what snapped him out of it. And that's it. That's as far as it went. That and she punched him, didn't she? Hit him? Well, whatever.
She might have smacked
him. I think she slapped him in a previous issue, so probably not this one. But I think that comment, which I don't know where it came from, is except for the fact that Spock was always the smartest guy in the room and usually came up with the solutions. I think they just snapped him out of it. Now, the rest of it, where Spock is able to telepathically connect with every controlled Starfleet officer, crewman, whatever, and get them simultaneously to all rebel against being controlled, like that right. Kelpian security officer did.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I did not really think about the Kelpian security officer who in the early issue when they first got onto the Starbase, that she did rebel against it, and it ended up killing her in a very nasty way.
She exploded. So
I forgot about that at first, and then I was like, well, what the heck are they doing? What? Everything's... What? And then it's like, oh, the Kelpian security officer. But it's like, hold on a second. That Kelpian security officer had a bug in her.
Right.
And her being able to have enough willpower to rebel against it killed them both. So I could see that the bugs that are in these Starfleet people dying, which also is killing them. But what about all the loose crawling around critters? And then they were blowing up. I mean, look at them. They're going splat, splat.
Right. But right before they get beaten up, they were about to get overtaken by the bugs that were coming out of the dead people, right? I mean, I think the bugs were still alive. Some of them were.
Well, okay. I'm sorry, but they're all dying. I mean, even the head of one of the giants explodes. Oh,
yeah, definitely the giant explodes.
Well, would you think the... I mean, look at that spot where they have like all the... It's a ground level view of all the little alien parasite guys, and they're all going... And then spat.
Yeah, no,
and they look like they're dying.
I'm agreeing with you, but then you turn the page and it shows them crawling out of a Cardassian's mouth. Those don't look dead.
Well, okay. Well, most of them appear to be dying. And then two out of the three, I think they showed three of them. So we know the queen's dead and on her back, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think there are now three that have come through the portal. And one looks like his head explodes.
It does.
But the other two seem intact. So what?
No, they explode too. They explode on the next panel.
Did they?
Yeah. So there's one panel where one explodes, and then the next panel shows the other two explode.
Time for me to open the book. I was hoping not to do this, but I'm going to have to.
But yeah, it's all on the same page. So the first panel of that page shows all the little ones splatting. Second panel shows the big creature having its head exploded, and then there's three panels at the bottom that shows the other two exploding. And falling on Sela.
My main original point is all of these alien critters are blowing up that are outside of these people's bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's enough of a stretch, a suspended disbelief, that them rebelling kill the aliens that were in them, but the idea that all the things that are external to them, including these big, huge beasts, that they're blowing up to.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, is that their head exploding, or do they have a bunch of little of these critters in their heads?
Well, it got me wondering. Maybe these alien queens that we kept calling them are really just other hosts for the parasite. So... Maybe these were just like some species that were on another planet and the little guys took over.
Oh, how interesting.
As their muscle. Because
they're insectoids also, but still.
Right, yeah. But when we read it the first time, I always thought that they were like the queen from Aliens. But now I'm like, well, maybe they were just a poor host too, that they just happened to be big monstrous.
They have big monstrous alien or insect kind of things. But still, they do look different from the... In a lot of ways, they look different from the other guy.
But they also look kind of the same because they have six eyes. And so.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. So the main thing is, I think they're stretching a lot here to wrap things up. So obviously the writer wants to wrap things up. Cantwell wants to wrap things up. Okay, fine. So it's like, fine. Okay, we're going with this. Okay, fine. Whatever. Everybody, all the people die except for our people. Now also notice that B'Elanna didn't die.
Yeah, B'Elanna didn't pop.
So when she became a Borg, did the Borg nanites like destroy it inside of her or somehow excise it from her?
No, it was still there because that's why she fought Hugh in this issue, is because she was still connected to it.
Okay, so why didn't she blow up?
Yeah, I don't know. I had the same question.
Okay. Because they didn't want her to blow up.
That's right. She had plot armor.
Exactly. Plot armor. Perfect. Okay. Anyway. So anyway, but they got it wrapped up. All the Starfleet people are dead. Apparently all the insects are dead, and we had a big explodey thing on the other side of the dimensional right. portal.
But do you think it's really over? Because
For now.
Did the end make you think that Spock has one in him?
I assume that Spock never got one, but I don't know why he wouldn't, right? I mean, he was in there.
Right. I mean,
he was. Is it because he somehow mind-melded with it and he didn't have to have a bug in him? I don't know. But as far as I mean, obviously he never had one.
Well, I don't know, because at the end, he touches the back of his neck, and then he says, does anybody have a protrusion from their neck? And then they all check, and they say no, and then he's like, good. But
it's a joke. I like it.
Was he saying that because he had one?
I think he made a Spock joke.
That was a Spock joke? Okay.
I think.
I hope
now,
so.
Maybe... Well, didn't they... I know they showed that in the TNG episode, right?
Right, yeah, with the little tail coming out.
Exactly, right. Like the back of that commander or whatever, that guy that ended up being exploded. I think he had a little thing coming out of the back of his neck. Yeah, I don't think Spock ever had one. Of course, he does have a high collar, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he might have one.
It's hard to tell.
We'll find out.
Anyway, they wrapped it up. And so now the new big baddie, what do you think? For the next
Daddy Warbucks. Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty excited because I hope it kind of ties in with they showed she's on in an issue a while back. So is what Daddy Warbucks doing going against she's on, you know, or is he in league with him? So I'm curious to see where that goes.
Me too. You're calling him Daddy Warbucks too now.
Yeah, no, that's what I'll call him from now on.
She's on coming into this again. And what is this guy's thing anyway? I mean, Daddy Warbucks is trying to do a coup against the Romulan government.
Right.
Is that the deal?
Maybe, which is what Shizan's doing. So,
because I think they insinuated that Daddy Warbucks higher ups in the high command or whatever know he's doing something and are trying to get him. So I think we're about to have yet another Romulan civil war going on, or at least an attempted coup. And for some reason, Daddy Dear really wants Celia to be a part of this.
Right.
But why? I mean, she's only one person.
Don't know. But he definitely wants her to be part of it, because he even says, if I have to, I'll kill you, and then I'll just tell everybody how bravely you died. You know, so it's just like, he really wants her.
Oh, well, to look good. And, yeah. Yep. And, of course, I assume that Sela did the evil turn, or appears to do the evil turn, because she's trying to save everybody, right? Because she's turned a new leaf, over a new leaf. She's a good person now. She loves her mother now, instead of thinking of her as weak and whatever. So now she's turning to her human half. So she must be just, you know, buying for time, right?
Hope so.
Me too.
Because if not, then I'm like, man, I was... You know, when she's first sitting at the con, I was like, oh, that's cool that she's going to be part of the team now. Yeah. And then her dad shows up and screws that all up.
Yeah.
But there for a second, I was pretty happy that she was joining the team official.
Yeah. Well, okay, so odds are Daddy Warbucks will be foiled. Sela probably will become part of the team, or they'll kill her off. I don't think they'll kill her off. I think they really like that character. I know I like the character.
Yeah.
So. I think she'll be a part of the regular crew ongoing, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and then they still got to find Lore. So, I mean, I'm assuming whatever he's doing out there is going to tie back into this storyline at some point.
That, or are they going to hold him in reserve? But, didn't we see an issue cover coming up that appears to have Lore on the cover?
Oh, did we? I don't remember.
I think there's one out there coming up.
Okay.
It looks like Lore, because he's smiling, and then there's an inset picture of Data that looks normal, who is still disabled as far as we know.
Yeah, right.
So maybe Lore ends up getting Data going again. But whether he's part of, I guess he has to be part of this. You know, whatever. I'm sure Camel knows what he's doing.
Yeah, so far he's doing pretty good. Just again, we know what happens in Nemesis, so they have to eventually get to that point where everybody's back to somewhat normal.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe this whole Daddy Warbucks is one of the people that, along with Shizan, who is setting up this whole thing to turn the Romulan High Council into, what, Dusty Bits?
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe this is the genesis of all that.
Yeah, which would be cool if they could actually, like I said, if they could do that, get this story to there, and then do Nemesis as kind of like a, as the big crossover event of the two series, is like what was Sisko doing during the events of Nemesis and stuff like that, and then split them off again so that, you know, Worf goes back to the Defiant, you know, after the wedding. I would love it if they could do that and then do some post Nemesis stuff.
Right.
So I got two more comments about this issue. One, when Worf rides down the alien queen's front. Yeah, like a pirate going down a sail.
Sail?
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Thought that was pretty funny. And then lastly, did we see Daddy Warbucks' ship being red before?
I don't think so.
So I think that's kind of surprised when it popped up red.
I think that's a new coloring decision, colorist decision. We've been seeing Deer Decks class ships, you know, since TNG. So maybe they just want to make it red to just mix things up a little bit.
Right, to show that he's rebelling or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The new order. The red path. Oh, whoops. They've already used
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's been used already. Okay, so it's a Deer Decks, right? So this is the thing that always went toe-to-toe with Picard in the Enterprise-D. It was supposed to be very comparable ships. So the Defiant was supposed to have the firepower of a full-size starship, full-size shields, all that kind of stuff, but in a smaller Borg-fighting package, right? So do we know that they would have lost in the fight against a Deer Decks? The Defiant, or because they're pretty much acting like, oh, the Defiant is, there's no way it can fight against the Deer Decks.
Right. Well, they are, and so severely undermanned, though.
Well, they're undermanned, but I mean, they've been flying this ship around for many issues.
Right.
So they don't have a medic. Okay.
Right. But I mean, have they been in big battles with comparable ships?
Well, they did go up against that
Orion fleet.
Orion, that Orion crab thing, whatever that was.
Yeah.
And that, now, that was kind of kicking their butt. I guess the main thing I'm just trying to say is, I guess you're automatically meant to assume that Daddy Warbucks has the Defiant dead to rights. And that's just what you're supposed to believe. And so they're not going to talk about the option that, well, you know, Defiant's supposed to be a warship, dedicated warship. You know, it probably could put up a pretty good fight, but you want Sela to be able to make the decision that I have to go along with this or else everybody's going to die. So,
right.
But I just question that. And another thing I question ship wise is before the Deer Decks comes out of hiding, we see you flying off in the same class of shuttle, the Chaffee, that is in the Defiant. So when I first looked at the panel and saw that what appeared to be the Chaffee was leaving the Defiant, I thought it was the one and only shuttle that was on the Defiant. But then they say, oh, it's a Starbase shuttle. So I just kind of, I hate to be the whiny little, you know, know-it-all geek, but I mean, wouldn't they be in a more normal shuttle if they're taking it from a roomy, you know, a star base that has roomy shuttle bays? Because I always had the feeling that the Chaffee was a bit of a compromise because it had to fit into the Defiant, which is not a huge starship.
Right, which is small.
Right. So the Chaffee's smallish, you know, it's, you know, probably doesn't, I don't think it has weaponry, but maybe it does. I don't know. I would think that a nice roomy starbase would have normal size shuttles, not a Chaffee size.
Well, I didn't like that line anyways, because he says, thank you and tell Starbase 99, thank you for letting me borrow the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you thinking? Back. Everybody's dead. Well, everybody's dead. Starbase 99
and you're not
dead.
Bringing that back.
So I was just like, why even put that in there?
Well, is it a dig? He's polite.
Is it a dig at all the dead people that are still like covered with dead bugs?
No, it's not a dig. It's just showing that you was polite.
Yeah, because it's only 2 days after they left. I mean, after the events of the finale. So I don't think a new Starfleet crew has shown up in those 2 days to start manning the station.
Oh, no, I don't think so either.
Right.
So. I don't think so either. I think they just took the ship and said, yeah, you take that. Take that. We're not going to take you back to Starfleet. Just go.
So, anyways.
And I would think that they would, I mean, because quite frankly, that Chaffee always gave me the impression it was a compromised design so it could fit. So I did not know that it was warp capable, but I guess it is. Why not take a runabout or maybe any of the other shuttlecrafts that are smaller that are runabout that are warp capable as opposed to the Chaffee? But
right.
I guess that's the shuttle you expect to see with the Defiant. So that's why they use the Chaffee design. But
I don't know.
Just made me question. Excuse me, sir. Sir.
Anyway. All right. Anything else?
That's it.
All right. Well, then we did do these a little out of order. So the Defiant did come out after Star Trek 21, but they don't have any crossover, so it didn't matter. But saying that, let's jump into issue 21 of Star Trek, the 2022 series.
Okay.
All right, so we have Star Trek issue number 21. This came out or has a cover date of June of 2024. Written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Artist by Megan Levins. Colorist Lee Lowridge. Letterer Clayton Cowles. Design and production Neil Yutaki. Group editor Heather Antos. Assistant editor is Vanessa Rial. And editorial assist is by Cassandra Jones. So at the back of the book, we get to see the three covers. Cover A is by Megan Levins, art and colors by Lee Lowridge. And it shows Sisko, Crusher, and Sato kind of standing at the bottom of the page. And then behind them and reaching out into the heavens is like a wall of light where we see like some gods poking out. So we see Apollo, Trelane, some other ones that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a minute. Cover B is by Rozan, and it looks like it would be like the all-white covers that they do where you can have an artist draw it for you. But this has like Sisko with glowing eyes ripping through the white page. And then the last one, the incentive cover, is by J.J. Lindell. It is a stained glass picture. At the top of the page, we see Soon from Card Season 2. And then next to her, we see the Enterprise D. And then below them, we see Data. Below him, we see Spot. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, it's all purple, and it's just some sort of face. But I'm not quite sure who it is. So the story starts with the Theseus entering Pleroma. And they're being guided slash warned off by Aegis supervisor Kor Soong. She tells them that they should not have come, and then she confirms with Talir that the Organians are all gone, and that she will be the last of the Organians. Sisko has to show off a little bit of his god power in order to be able to allow entry into Pleroma. The main crew take a shuttle, the final way to Pleroma, and when they land, they're greeted by a large number of floating godlike beings. And we see in the bunch, we see Trelane, Apollo, and Bright Eyes from the original series, Year 5 comic book series. I didn't know he was a god. And then we see quite a few other ones, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Crusher has a little sidebar with Soon, and she gives her a pin and says that this pin will allow her to see her son, Wesley. So Crusher enters a doorway that opens up without any hesitation. The God Council and the Theseus crew banter back and forth, and a lot of it is about the loss of the Organians, but they do find a way to talk about the fate of the multiverse. Meanwhile, on the Aegis space station, Crusher uses a hypo to knock herself out so that she'll appear dead, and so that all the other supervisors on the station will stop looking for her. It seems to work, and luckily no one notices her nearly lifeless body in an alleyway for who knows how long. Once she's awake, she makes her way to the office of a certain Wesley Crusher. Meanwhile, on Paroma, the bantering continues when suddenly a new god appears and seems to have everybody, even the other gods, quaking in their boots. Mama Sisko shows up and says that it's time for her son to come home and that everything else is about to burn. To be continued. Well, so what'd you think of that big ending?
Mommy
showing
okay.
up. You know, we had Daddy Warbucks in the last issue, and today we have Mama Warbucks coming to take her little son to get a paddling.
That's a good point. I really didn't draw that parallel, but yeah. So Big Mama's here to take care of little Ben. It was an okay issue.
I liked the issue until the end. I did not like Big Mama showing up and saying, I'm going to take you home, little Benny. Give you a whooping.
Right.
Plus, all the gods are like, oh my God, someone showing up that's not invited. I mean, are they scared of her or the prophets? I wasn't quite sure what those last few panels meant. What was your take on it?
There's definitely something going on with the prophets versus all the gods that are in Paloma. But I don't know what the history of that is. Obviously, since the prophets did not take up residence with everybody in Paloma, it's like maybe there is a history between the two groups. And maybe the prophets are kind of out there and maybe a sort of a parallel threat to these people or these gods. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, but obviously there's some history and the prophets choose to not associate with these other gods.
Right. And we know that Talor is like the last of his or their species, right? The last of their god line is Talor, right? Mm-hmm. But all the other ones, are they also the last of their races? I mean, because it shows them all in like little council type pictures, and it just shows one character that we know from each of those races. But I would assume that there's a whole bunch of Metrons there.
You'd think so. You'd think so. And, which is something we talked about before recording, why is it only gods that the Federation has come into contact with? Wouldn't you think there would at least be a handful of other ones that are better at keeping their identity secret? I don't know.
Yeah, and why, like the caretaker? He's dead. We saw him die. He never came back to life. Why is he here? You know, I mean, I guess it's timey-wimey stuff, but still, I thought it was weird that the caretaker from Voyager showed up as a god. I mean, I know that it pulled people from across the universe or the galaxy, but still, I mean, did that make him a god? I don't know. Maybe more godlike than some of these other ones.
A Nicene. Well, let's talk about the different aliens that are here. Now you bring it up. So Trelane. All we got is Trelane, not his parents.
Yeah, you know, nothing. Well, they from do mention species. That they wanted his parents, but they got him instead.
Good point. So this is a group that not everybody wanted to join their little clique.
Right.
So the prophets didn't. And the rest of Trelane's species, they basically said, oh, you're going to take Trelane? Okay, yeah, you do that, and we'll be over here. He's a real pain.
And we know that Q's already gone, right? Because he showed up earlier in the series and said that he was going somewhere. We thought that he was going here, but
apparently
he doesn't show up, so I guess he went somewhere else.
Then Apollo, didn't he leave his people anyway?
Yeah, I never heard of them supposedly being called Palaxin. So was that mentioned in the
species?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I don't remember it. It does call Apollo a Palaxian. Palluxian. So maybe they did refer to it, but I don't recall.
Right. It is kind of funny because it's Apollo Palaxian. Anyways. So what about Charlie Metron. X? Why is he there?
Well, good point. So Thasian. So the actual So Charlie Evans is identified as a human with Thasian genetic augmentation. So I assume the Thasians are the godlike beings that took Charlie under their wing.
Right.
And so originally had him survive because they gave him powers. Good question. Is that another thing like Trelane? They say, okay, here you go, take. But the rest of us, when they vote,
he does say, I speak for the Thasians or whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, well, why? Why don't one of their full bloods show up?
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, how about the Guardian of Forever? I mean, okay, so the Guardian was a machine. He was a machine. Construct. A machine. But essentially, yes. And then it was really not that smart. Now, over the eons, it apparently developed a personality and a taste for bowler hats. So what would you call that? A godlike species? I don't know.
Don't know. That seems pretty loose to me.
I mean, it's pretty loose.
It's, you know, a portal through time and space, but...
Okay. Well, we don't want to take forever with this. So what we're trying to get to now, I think, unless you have other things to say some of the other ones is...
Well, there's two big ones I want to still talk about. So I like the Umbega one, the daughter. I mean,
Let's talk about that.
I don't understand why she's there, because she's still a hybrid, right? So where's all the other Boltzmann species? Are they there too? And she just speaks for all of them?
I do not know. In the Strange New World story... she ended up merging with the Boltzmann. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So that's great that you picked another character or a situation that happened out of a TV series we know about. But yeah, it seems very a naturally occurring Boltzmann brain fusion with human consciousness. Naturally occurring? Okay. I mean, that's great that they got her there. But again, where's the rest of the Boltzmanns? I agree.
Right. And then the last one is the Tholian. Why is the Tholian there?
The biggest question mark on the list, I think. The Tholians were just another species, a threat to the Federation, and they were just another corporeal species. So what happened since Taw's time frame to allow the Tholians to advance to the point that they became gods?
Right. And this is Bright Eyes. So Bright Eyes was the Tholian that Kirk took in. And we saw lots of adventures in Star Trek Year 5 of Bright Eyes. And then Bright Eyes ended up fighting Aegis and the other Tholians, you know. But at the end of that series, it didn't ascend to any type of godhood. It was just like it was trying to broker a peace between the Federation and the Tholians, but it never...
So he was like an ambassador kind of thing.
Yeah. Never did it seem to have godlike powers or be considered a god. So I was really confused as to why Bright Eyes showed up.
Yeah. So something happened between Taw's time frame and TNG time frame / Defiant or / DS9 / whatever. Yeah. So whatever that was. Now, we do know that there was the story where Gary Seven came into the picture, and he was the bad guy. And it was eventually uncovered that the Aegis wanted the Tholians to take over the entire Milky Way and just be the benevolent kings that subjugated all the other races, including the Federation and Klingons and Romulans and whatever. So were they doing that because the Tholians were that advanced that they were on the cusp of becoming gods? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. It doesn't make any sense.
No.
And in that one, that was the Year 5 storyline. I thought it ended with Gary Seven dying. Right? Isn't that how it ended? But here he's alive, so I don't, you know, we have to deal with the whole timey-wimey thing, but...
I'm sorry. Where do you see Gary Seven?
When Crusher's, like, being followed by... Gary Seven and that Navarre.
Oh, that's Gary Seven?
Isn't it?
Well, I don't know that he was. Did he call him Gary Seven?
No, but he sure looks like him.
Oh. Okay, yeah. So there's the whole, of course, as you mentioned, there's the whole thing where Crusher wants to go and see Wesley. And she's in Aegis Land or whatever, one of their installations. and there's a Vulcan and a human. And the human does have a 20th century suit on and tie, but I don't know that he's Gary Seven.
Wow. Huh. Well, even his face to me looks like Gary Seven. I just assume that's who it was.
Yeah, I guess it could be. And so the Vulcan appears, the Vulcan appears to have a Starfleet uniform from future.
Yeah. Yeah, they say he's from Navarre.
From the 3000.
Right. And they're talking about there? Navarre, the Romulan Vulcan unified world. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay.
So yeah, they say they're talking about food from the 32nd century. So he's definitely from that time frame.
Okay. Because he's got a very asymmetrical tunic on.
Yeah, and they love that. Like those. They love that in the Discovery time frame.
They love in the Discovery shows. Yeah, I don't like that at all personally. I think it looks weird, but whatever. Okay, so that's where you got Gary Seven from. Mm-hmm. I agree, he could be Gary Seven, but until I hear him called Gary Seven, I'm not going to think he's Gary Seven, but okay, fine. Okay. Gary Seven. Okay, right. So that's where Gary Seven came from.
Anyways.
You know, timey-wimey stuff. That could be an earlier version of him from
exactly, before the past,
before he died.
Before he tried to take over the universe with the Tholians.
Exactly.
For the greater good.
Right.
Well, what did you think about her using that hypo to quote unquote die so that the computer wouldn't pick up her life signs?
I thought that was over the top. Totally over the top.
That was so stupid. Maybe that's not the right word, but I mean, literally she's just slumped into the corner where anybody could walk by and still see her.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's just right around the corner from the Navarian and Gary Seven, right?
Right.
All I had to do was walk around the corner. There she is, slumped down.
Yep.
Having a nap. and it doesn't look like she's got a hypo with her. I mean, she doesn't have a bag or anything. And she just has the pen, right?
Right.
That lets
earlier
her
and then all of a sudden she has the and then all of a sudden she has the hypo too.
Right. Which just happens to be loaded with exactly the drug she needs.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Maybe eventually Dr. Crusher had her own little sonic screwdriver hypo that could be anything she needs it to be when she needs it. So.
Oh, there you go. Didn't even think about that.
There you go. It can do anything it needs to do, according to the storyline.
So we didn't get any Wesley in this issue, unfortunately.
No. We're gonna. Oh, we're gonna. They're gonna make a big deal out of that. But right. At least I'm sure we'll find out that Wesley may not end up being as much in our corner as we would think he would be automatically. But in the end, he's going to be in our corner on this.
Right. Right.
So that's going to be good. Anyhow, so what do you think? I mean, what's the deal with mom coming back all the time? I mean, she keeps on saying, you don't go there. You don't go to Pleroma.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I mean, that's the only reason why they weren't killed right off is that Sisko was like
threatening them.
Well, I'm half God, so I should be here. And then they're like, OK, you can come in since you're a prophet. And then when she starts showing up, they all act like, oh, a full blooded prophet's about to come. They do act kind of like she's not invited. And, you know, they act like it's a big deal. And then she shows up and. Gonna take him home. Oh, and then she says, you know, the this place and everywhere else is gonna burn now too because of what he did. So,
and all else must burn.
Now, is she going to do the burning, or is she just saying because of what he's done, it's now going to happen? And if he wouldn't have, then it would have been spared. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I think in the end, it's nothing to do with Sisko. I think there's some competing groups of immortals here, godlike beings.
Oh, you think there's another batch that are going to try to take over or something?
Well, no. I mean, I think it's the prophets versus all these other people.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I'm with you. Why don't we see, you know, Cardassian's gods or? Gowron, or not Gowron, Kalis wouldn't show up. Oh, what if the real Kalis just showed up?
No, he's not a god.
The real Kalis.
Okay, but...
The one that's in Stovakor. But yeah,
he's still not a god.
I'm going with you. Why do we only get these eight and not the millions and millions of other godlike beings that we probably don't know about?
Sure. It would be, at least have a few that we've never heard of before. I guess it would drag things down, explaining what they are. But It's like, come on. You've got that little list there that you had on that one page. You can add another one or two people we haven't seen before. Come on.
And I do find it funny that they keep going to this well. You know, there for a while, it was always the Mirror Universe, right? They did so many Mirror Universe stories. And now, it's like, this is the second big god crossover that they've had in the last few years. I mean, because there was that Kelvin story where Q brought in all the other gods and brought in the Kelvin universe, Kirk, and the DS9 universe, Sisko, and everything to do that that challenge, right? Weren't they doing like a chess match or something with Trelane?
Mm-hmm.
And then Wesley shows up with the girl Q from Next Generation.
So that one episode?
Yeah. So, I mean, but all these same gods were in there, well, except for the ones that we didn't know about, like the Bozeman, or not the Bozeman, the Mbenga's daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a surprise.
So, anyways, it just seems weird that they're revisiting a storyline they've already kind of done, which is a battle of the gods. Because that one was that they were going to destroy the universe, right? So, like, half the gods wanted to destroy the universe, and the other half of the gods wanted to keep it, and then Q talked them into letting these humans from the two different universes come in and...
battle it out.
Yeah, right? Or they all, like, partnered up, right? Everybody got their own human group. Yeah, I can't remember, but, I mean, it was just like, we've already done, like, the Battle of the Gods things before.
Well,
but I guess it's been, what, probably 5-10 years? So I guess it's been a while. Time to revisit it.
Well, and if you compare these kind of stories to, like, oh, they're fighting the Klingons again. Or, oh, they're fighting the Cardassians again.
Good point.
Or, oh, they're, I mean, come on, I mean.
The Romulans are up to
some of these scenarios a lot.
Yeah, right. Right. Anyway. All right, I'll give you that.
Okay.
All right, I really don't have anything else. How about you?
Okay, so I guess one of the big reveals here is T'Lyr wants Sisko to go here because he's pleading to bring his people back.
Oh. Good point. Yeah.
The Arganians, right? So right. It was not clear to me why T'Lyr wanted to go here so bad and why he needed Sisko to help him and all this kind of stuff. But they must have talked about this, and now the rest of us find out. And it's like, oh, okay. So you want all these gods to help bring your Arganian people and your father back from the dead.
Right.
Okay. That's a bit of an ask. But sure. Okay. And of course, everybody pretty much, I mean, well, it was a vote. They voted on it, of course, as you said.
Right.
And there you go. So so it's kind of nice to know in this one, you know, what T'Lyr's deal is.
Right. Yeah. And they make a big deal about the Guardian abstaining from the vote. But It didn't matter if he voted. He was already outnumbered. It was already like, 7-1? And then the Guardian's like, I refrain from voting. And they're like making a big deal about, you know, like it was a, like if it was going to be close, like his vote would have mattered. But Okay, so let's do the count. So it was 2-2.
So the Aegis said
7.
Sure, let's
2-7.
Back.
Yeah. So the Aegis and the Tholian said yes. Everybody else said no. And then the Guardian was like, I abstain. It doesn't matter. He could have voted yes. It still would have been outnumbered.
Yeah.
Unless there's like a majority, like they have to have 70% or something like that.
But did he say, I'm not voting because, again, I mean, when we met him in Taz, I mean, he said, I'm just here to offer you the past or the future. I don't do anything. Right. I don't pick sides.
Good point.
I'm just here to do that. So is that like a carryover from that original programming that he's still kind of carrying around? He doesn't really get involved as much?
It's not really what he says, though. Basically, he says, I abstain, but the reason I'm abstaining is because if I voted, if you did bring back the Organians, the universe would burn. But there's a lot of burning in this one. So if he knew what would happen.
Now, that's a good point. If we act now, the entire universe will burn. And then what do we have Sisko's mother saying at the end?
Right. Yep.
Huh. Good point. I didn't even notice that. Hmm.
Okay. But, I mean, but if he knew that bringing him back would cause the universe to burn, then why not vote no?
Well, quite frankly, they should all say no.
Right.
I mean, come on. What, Bowler guy? If they do this, the entire universe burns? Well, no. I would be voting against it, too.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry about the Organians, but sorry.
Right.
I don't want the entire universe to burn.
And you were talking about the sentience of the Guardian. I'm just saying, if we can say that Data is sentient, then I guess we could say that the Guardian is too.
Sure. Fine. He just sounded pretty stupid.
Yeah.
In the original series episode, Today of the Energy Forever. Yeah, I mean, he was just a robot.
He sounded like a robot. Yeah.
Yeah. Or that's how he's presented. Obviously, all that was reworked in the Discovery episode.
What was his name? Carl?
Something
in Discovery?
Like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Nice name, Carl. I got one last thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
The shuttle they took when they went to see the gods, so they left the Theseus. I like that shuttle design. So it's time for me to talk about hardware. I believe the first place we saw this particular class 11, is it a class 11? I don't know. It's like, it's like a type 11 shuttle. And I think the first time we saw this was from the Enterprise E, and it was in Insurrection, I think. Or
this one they were flying when they were singing?
Exactly right. Where they were trying to get Data out of that other ship. I love the design. It's really sleek, maybe too sleek to be believed. I think the runabouts are perfect. You know, they're believable. They're kind of big, but they're pretty cool, long range warp capable ships. But these are warp capable too, and they're smaller and they're sleeker. But I just really like the design. I just wanted to say that.
On the record, I like the design. Yeah.
This is an Enterprise E shuttle. You had a cool new ship, you get a cool new shuttle. And that's it. So I like it. I'm glad they used it. It makes sense that they would be using it on Theseus. If they didn't come up with a new one of their own.
Right. Yeah, you would think that they would come up with a new one.
Yeah. But I like that design. I think it looks great. Unfortunately, I do not have one in my Eagle Moss collection.
Did they not make it, or you just never got it?
I don't think they've ever made one. Mm. They didn't get around to it. I mean, considering how many ships they had created, you would think they would get around to this one. But
right, since it was actually screen used as opposed to a lot of the ones they did make.
Yeah, they did a lot of things that were concept and those kind of things. And this is pretty cool looking. I mean, I like the Delta Flyer. I think that's a great design. But this thing looks pretty good, too.
Right.
And they did a... Eagle Moss did multiple sizes of the Delta Flyer, including a big one.
And a lot of people, that's their favorite Star Trek. So it's good that
Voyager?
They're catering. Yeah.
Mm. It's not my favorite. I mean, I like it, but it's not my favorite.
Right.
I like TNG number one, and I like probably DS9 number two. I mean, if you don't, okay, let's not talk about TOS. But Voyager is more like three or four.
My favorite is the animated series.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. You're a fibber.
I love that stilted animation.
Where they reuse drawings at every turn.
Right. And they got force fields so they can walk in space. I love it.
Exactly. There you go. Those belts were handy.
Anything else?
Nothing else, just that I just want to say that I'm a little bit more into what I think Defiant is doing than what I am seeing Star Trek 2022 in the middle of.
Right. Yeah. We'll see.
Yes, we will see. Okay.
All right. So next week, though, we're going to finish off our coverage of Star Trek Sons, or Sons of Star Trek.
Sons of Star Trek. Sounds like a Western.
Yeah. So this was another multiverse type thing. Uh-huh. But I really had my reservations going into it, but I really like the first two issues. So I'm looking mm-hmm. forward to finishing that one off.
Me too. So we did the first two issues sometime back, and what, episode 422? 422. And then now we're going to do 3 and 4 next time in episode 427. Wonderful.
Can't wait.
Brilliant. Okay. Okay. Right. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on The Review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.